CliffCentral.com.
Right, CliffCentral.com on this lovely Tuesday morning. It's such a pleasure to welcome back to the show someone who we haven't seen for a long, long time. And I'm not going to sing her song because I'm not allowed to. We're on YouTube now, and so they'll be cross with us. But she works hard for her money, so hard for it, honey. Yes, it's Anthea Gardner time. How's it, Anthea? How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. I'm very well, thanks. Delighted to be back, of
course. It's nice to see you.
So much going on.
Yeah. Well, tell us how you are, first of all, and what you've been up to, because we need a little catch-up before we go anywhere else.
Sure. I've been great. Other than yesterday, I got told I'm going under the knife for a disc replacement in my spine.
Wow. That must be very annoying for you, because you are, you know, you're into doing all these half Ironmans and Ironmans, and you run and you swim and you do all these very physical things. That must be annoying.
Oh, it's terrible. But the pain in my arm has been awful, and I'm ready to cut it off. So I'm glad we're just going to sort that out. But other than that, things are well, you know. We've got a nice new team. Well, not completely new, but quite a few new people. So you need to come and visit and say hi and meet everyone.
Definitely.
And then business is good. You know, it's been volatile markets, obviously. But we've seen some nice kind of sector rotation or moves into the right sector, which I'll tell you about in a minute. And that's about all I've got on a personal basis.
Well, that's interesting enough. So let's just talk about the economy generally. And this is something you used to do for us once a week. But like, how's it been from an investment point of view? And what's actually happening? Because I haven't had a look at our South African stock market for the longest time. And we've still got lots and lots of people, including me, who have, you know, bundles and baskets and portfolios with you and other in other places. These days, you know, people are so disintermediated that many people just do it themselves. But what is the general picture for investors?
Sure. So it's a little bit boring, actually. Well, I shouldn't say that, because the two-year return on the JSE is 26.5%, which is not terrible. Mm-mm. It's the volatility in between that gets us all very nervous and cranky, and, you know, we don't know when to sell and when to buy. And these are the times you really just need to put on your seatbelt, harness yourself in, put on your crash helmet, and stick with it, because, the only people who really make money when the markets are this volatile are the traders who get in and out very quickly. And they're there every day looking at the market, and a little change for them is a big bonus. And they can read it, and, you know, if they lose one today, they'll make it up tomorrow. But for the rest of us who are long-term investors, sit tight. It's the only way to go. I mean, the one thing that really bothers me at the moment is the rand. 6 months ago, this rand was 13.41. I actually almost can't believe it. This morning, it's 15.85. So well done to all my clients who have taken money offshore. And we've done quite a bit offshore, actually. But I'll talk about that in a moment as well. But just locally still, I'm really worried about the economy. The unemployment rate is through the roof and shocking. The politicians are all distracted by, I don't know, coalitions and voting and whatever nonsense they're up to. And then, of course, you would have seen the new finance minister deliver the medium-term budget policy statement a couple of weeks ago. And then we really had a nice boon from the high commodity prices. But I don't think this is going to last forever. And in fact, your name came up in one of my investment meetings 2 weeks ago, because we were talking about commodities. And I asked some of the analysts, so what is in the PGM basket? And you could see them kind of going, platinum. And I said, if Gareth Cliff was here, he'd know. Do you still remember?
Okay, so we've got platinum, we've got gold. We were just talking about this, actually, with Dion.
No, not gold. No. So it's platinum.
Oh, the platinum group metals. That's what you're talking about.
The PGM basket.
Okay, so we got platinum, palladium, we've got rhodium, and we've got silver to a lesser degree. Is silver not in there?
You'd probably get a little bit of offshoot of silver, but the other three important
iridium
ones are those really weird ones. So there's osmium.
Mm-hmm.
So you got it 50%. Right. You're getting there.
Osmium and iridium.
That's it. Iridium you would have got as well. So that's what I said to them. Gareth would know what's
platinum
in it. So anyway,
group metals.
That's right. So we've had like that nice commodity boon, and that gave us quite a bit of cash in the treasury or the budget. But I fear that that is not going to go on forever, you know. And then in the US, we're seeing kind of the economy opening up again after lockdown, but also not perfectly across the board. Also different sectors, you know, at their last GDP report, we saw a huge spike in activity in transport and hotels. Mm-hmm. And in fact, our portfolios are exposed very much thematically offshore via ETFs. And then one or two companies, so listen carefully, this is a nice one. One of the companies I'm watching quite closely is a company called Ginkgo Bioworks. Yeah. Which you can buy on the Easy Equities platform if you've still got some cash there, if you want to invest. Mm-hmm. And they do biogenetics, which I think is very interesting. And also kind of the IT sector had a nice run during lockdown. Everyone was shopping online and there was so much going on. But I think not all tech companies are going to make it. So if you want exposure to tech, I say get an ETF. And then I think next year, probably, we're going to see a little bit of what we saw in 2011, I think it was, a taper tantrum or a rate hike tantrum where the market is just going to kick back. Well, because economies are doing okay, interest rates are still incredibly low, and central banks have to normalize at some stage. So they're going to raise interest rates. In fact, you saw our central bank raising interest rates last week, Thursday, by 25 basis points, which quite frankly is just a waste of my time. Like, you know, it's just, it costs money to raise interest rates. The banks have to send out communications.
Yeah.
And I don't think 25 basis points makes
but
that
do
much
you,
difference.
Do you see it going up in the next couple of months even more?
Well, I tell you what, I owe my team beers because I had it wrong the last time. Last Thursday, I said, no, they're keeping rates as is. Mm-hmm. Maybe were. I'm not the best yeah. person to ask. I'll okay. tell you what, they should have kept it the same. But they're now telling us that they're looking at a 25 basis point, so a quarter of a percent hike every quarter into next year. So that's 2%, which is a hell of a lot on the repo rate, because the repo rate was 350. It's now 375. So you're pushing that up by, what is that, 70% or something over the next year? I don't think that's going to happen. They can't afford it. Our economy is going nowhere. Our inflation is very much in check. So there's actually just no need for them to do it, quite frankly.
Okay.
But hey, they disagreed with me last week.
I've got a few comments for you here. This is from Moonchild, says, wow, it's been so long since we've seen and heard Anthea. Good to see her. And KP says, I still have my Cliff Central bundle and it's grown fantastically. Of course, we changed the name there to Cartesian Capital Growth Portfolio, and he's on the aggressive one and it's been great. Couple of people saying here, like Byron says, Brian says, I'm a full-time Forex trader and I'm 32% for November. That's pretty good. Kampamba says, I gave my sister Anthea's book and she loved it so much. She somehow got a Zoom meeting with Anthea. I begged her to sing the song and she refused vehemently. I've never felt so betrayed.
Listen, I don't get paid for my singing voice. Yeah. Although here's something interesting. I'm going down to Franschhoek in December to narrate my book because we're turning it into an audio book.
Very good.
That's quite exciting if my voice doesn't change after my operation.
That's a very nice update. Dr. Robin wants to know what's going on with Sibanye. Will they recover?
So I haven't been watching them for a while now because my team has grown so much. I have quite equity specialists. And in fact, we're running our equity portfolios are now running using artificial intelligence.
Wow.
Okay. You know, yeah, I know. It's fantastically interesting, the things we're doing. We sold our Sibanye's a while ago because it did run so hard. And, you know, we're happy to take profits.
Right.
So I'm loath to give you a complete update before I've gone to check exactly what's happening. Maybe I need to come back.
I remember you used to be quite bullish, and you probably still are, on Naspers. And what do you think's going on there, and what do you think the outlook is for them? I mean, would you be buying or selling at the moment, just arbitrarily? And, of course, this does not constitute financial advice, just because we have to let people know. if you want the actual financial advice, you've got to pay for it. But what would you say about Naspers?
That's a really difficult one. It's underperformed the market quite significantly, and there's no reason for it to do that. So I would be, if I had some holding on to them, I mean, in fact, sorry, let me rephrase. I do have some, so I'm holding on to them. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't sell them just yet. I kind of want to get my money's worth out of them. Would I be putting new money into it? Not really. I must admit, most of my clients with new money, I'm sending offshore.
Okay.
I'm struggling to find real value in the JSC at the moment. And in fact, one of the reasons I'm here today, excuse me, is because somebody messaged you and said, we need to talk about Stellar Capital, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And the big concern, well, let's start with Stellar Capital are delisting. Mm-hmm. And this is not a massive new thing. Last year, 19 companies delisted from the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Most of them were small and mid-cap companies. By July of this year, 11 companies had delisted. You know, 10 of them were small and mid-cap companies. So you're seeing a lot of delistings on the JSE, and we'll talk about why in a minute. But I just am struggling to see where the value is going to come from in the shares. So a lot of companies have been held back because of lockdown, like the retail sector, for example. So I love ShopRite. I always have. Mr. Price, I always have. Pick and Pay, I think, is going to do particularly well. And I know there's a lot of competition for them, and people are shopping down because times are tough, I think, in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I quite like those. The financial shares have done spectacularly, but South African banks are just amazing. They just keep going up. Like the return on equity is just spectacular. So hold on to your banks. Buy some retailers if you don't have.
Why are so many companies delisting from the JSE? And is that just a general symptom of the economy's malaise, or is it because people aren't able to see the kind of value and growth that they have in past years?
So companies go to the stock exchange to list because they need capital. So they will sell shares in their company to get capital to expand their business. Right. Sometimes the owners want to take cash off the table, you know, gives them liquidity, enhanced visibility, because, you know, we come on the show and talk about the shares that are listed. We don't talk about the shares that are not listed, really, which is a double-edged sword, because the requirements when you're listing, the accountability you have towards shareholders is this double-edged sword, because it really, I mean, you have to report twice a year, which is not as bad as the US, where they report four times a year. And it takes management's eye off the ball in doing what they have to do every day when they're coming to market, reporting, going on the media, talking about their shares and what they're doing and making sure everything's right. You know, so that's one thing. And it's expensive to be listed. I think to list on the JSE is at minimum. Actually, no. The smaller companies can do it for R500,000, but the bigger companies, it's R1 million a year just to be listed.
It's a lot of money.
So that's, yeah. So I think just when companies want to reduce costs, or when they want expediency, or, like, you know, just they don't want shareholders and board directors to come into meetings and to vote about what they're going to do. And then also if they don't need the capital. And in Stellar's case, they particularly said that they just haven't had, through the JSE, the ability to raise cheap money that they normally would have if they went on the side to private clients. And I think really the expense and the fact that they haven't had access to cheap capital through the JSE is two of the big reasons. And the other reason, which is very obvious in on the JSE, is that investment holding companies trade at a discount to their value. So for example, if a company's net asset value is R100, the company generally trades at about between R60 and R75, which is a massive discount. And so the shareholders are actually just not getting value for their money.
Right.
And I think that's why companies are delisting, particularly Stellar Capital. Anchor Capital delisted earlier this year as well. They're an associate of mine. So really, it's quite a strategic move. And in Stellar Capital's case, the question is, should you hold on to your shares? Because you can. And then you'll get shares that are now unlisted, or take the cash. And this does not constitute financial advice. But I would, I would take the cash, because one of the reasons you invest on the JSE is for liquidity. Mm. And if you're not getting the liquidity, why, like, yeah. It makes your life so much more difficult, you know. And how do you then go off and value those shares, unlisted shares that you're holding?
Well, listen, I mean, that may not constitute financial advice, but it's certainly useful generally to know these things. That's why we like to catch up with you. And thank you, Anthea. I'm afraid we're out of time for this morning, but it's always good to see you. And all the best for the rest of this year. It's been a hell of a ride for the last year and a half. And this COVID thing has not helped. It's made things very uncertain. But there is money to be made, and you remind us of that. And it's about what? Time in the market, not timing the market, as you always say.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Gareth. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Anthea. There's Anthea Gardner, and she's a stalwart of the show, so it's great to see her back on here and telling us some useful things. Always useful things. Here's Le Bang. She's back. And we've got This Is Us coming up just now. We're going to be talking about... Now, this is probably like the biggest thing in South Africa. I always say so when it comes to social issues, when it comes to how we are getting things right and not getting things right. And we're going to speak to someone who's also no stranger to the show. There are lots of old reunions happening on today's show. And that is Charlie Peterson, who is just one of the most dedicated and devoted men in the country when it comes to his area of speciality, which is all about fathers and about men and about how we can start to repair and fix what is a very broken situation in South Africa. And Charlie Peterson speaks about this with experience and with compassion. And he's one of the people who I often refer to. I've had him on my TV show. I've had him on this show a number of times. He's always useful to talk to. And we'll speak to him along with Lebang and Yatish this morning. We're going to be talking about that in This Is Us, which is coming up. So this is very good stuff.
Yes.
All right. And tell me, have you figured out what you're doing for December yet with all those children of yours? Are you guys going to be able to go away? Are you going to be able to do things? Like, what's your plan of action?
You know, if it were up to me, I'd already be out of Joburg. Like, I'm a bit gutful with still being in the city. Yeah. I would be in the homelands if it were up to me. But we are planning to just go to Mpumalanga for like the whole month, like if possible. I'm going to take my kids there next week and then I'll hang back a little bit. And then as soon as we're done, I'm going to catch up with them. So everybody's going to Mpumalanga and they're just going to be there and it's going to be fantastic. Nice. And speaking of everybody, remember last week I told you guys I'm having like a whole reunion.
Yes, the family meeting. Yeah, we were waiting for this. So you got a feedback, you got a report back on the family meeting for us?
I do. And it wasn't a meeting. Remember, it was just like a pre-Christmas, let's all link up and sort of hang out.
Yeah,
because we haven't done so in 7 years.
You set it up so it sounded more like a meeting.
Well, good news is that it went phenomenally. It was so chill. It was so fun. Everybody was just laughing. You know, it was like 6-7 grandkids running up and down.
Nice.
My mom had like a face beat. Her face was beat to the gods. She looked absolutely stunning. Obviously, trying to make my dad jealous. You know, my dad was there just like enjoying all the kids. So it was fun. It was nice. There was no drama, sadly. Mbulelo. Sorry, bro. There was no drama.
Mbulelo was looking forward to some drama. You
know, yeah. But why did you say, obviously, she's trying to make my dad jealous? Why did you say that?
No, because I did her makeup and she specifically said, yeah, your dad must see me and see that I'm still hot. I was like, I got you, girl. I mean, we did the whole eyelashes. We did everything. She looked stunning. So it was great. It was cool. Nothing went wrong. Nothing.
Very nice.
You know, nobody barged in. So smooth.
I'm a little disappointed. We built this up to be very controversial and now nothing's happened. Ugh. Well, I'm happy that the family's happy.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
No, so, it's great. We're planning my mom's 60th in Jan, so we're doing a spit brine. And you guys are invited, so that's going to be great.
Excellent. It'll be better than the funeral food you had the other day, I'm sure.
Oh, trust me.
Yeah. There's something about a spit brine that's really not. Then you want me to get excited about food? That would get me excited about food. Tell you that much. All right. So here's an ethical dilemma for you just before we get to This Is Us. All right. So this is a question posed. Should a self-driving car kill the baby or the grandma in this picture? Depends on where you're from. And someone answered, if you drift, you should be able to take out both of them. Which is a horrible answer. But you know these automated vehicles, and this is going to be a big problem for the world. Is to figure out these ethical questions. Now, what would you do if you were programming the car? Would you program the car to take out the old lady or the baby?
Old lady.
Yeah. I think off the bat, definitely old lady, because, I mean, she's had her chance. But, like, I failed ethics in varsity, and it was because of things like this. I can't.
Well, I mean, they make these really complicated conundrums. They're like, well, if you are going to be driving down the road and, you know, there's a small family on the one side and then there's a single person on the other, but that single person is the CEO of a company, or, you know, in ethical terms, what would do the most damage, if you wiped out that small family or if you wiped out the CEO of this huge company? And then they have to program this into machines, because machines don't really care. Machines will go for whatever you program them to go for. And we have to think about these things, right? So it's just an interesting ethical dilemma. Speaking of ethical dilemmas, here's one other thing. This is the woman who's in charge of health in Northern Ireland. Have a look at her. Oh, sorry, Justice.
Jesus.
Yeah, she's in charge. Bulelo, describe her for people who are listening and not watching.
Holy smokes. Now, she looks like the Hamburglar who's never seen the sun, because she's wearing purple, right?
Yeah.
But she is gargantuan.
She's present.
Yeah, she's present.
Her arms. What a considerable figure.
Present.
Good Lord.
That's a great way to put it. She's present. Yeah, okay, so
she looks like... she's really pasty as well. Where's she from? Northern Ireland. Northern makes Ireland. Sense. Like, really pasty.
So she's apparently, she's the justice minister. Today she voted in favor of the introduction of vaccine passports in Northern Ireland to keep Northern Ireland, these are the words, healthy and safe. But she, she's a large lady, and I don't think that we should be putting people who can't look after themselves in a position where they have to make decisions for those of us who actually do need someone responsible in those positions. But I thought I'd bring that on, especially for Mbulelo this morning, because she's such a great-looking woman, and she's in charge of health in Northern Ireland. So if lots of people in Northern Ireland turn out to be very unhealthy, it's because the example's being set badly from the top. That's all we'll say about that.
Yeah.
She should not be talking about health. Sorry. Like, this is where people's feelings get into it. Like, well, what's the new thing? Body positive or whatever.
Yeah, body positivity. Yes.
No. We're not doing that. I'm not listening to that lady anything to do with health. Like, do not talk about it. And it's disgusting for her to think she can talk about it. It's so. Like, we're not children. Like, we can see, lady, you know nothing about keeping yourself healthy. How dare you think you can tell
me? You see, Lebang, I knew this was going to happen. That's why I had to bring that picture up. Just for Mbulelo.
Yes.
Yeah, you totally set him up. And he just walked right into it.
Yeah,
but you know what, Mbulelo, things like health and fitness, it'll just you'll unlock the side of him.
Yes.
I've seen him in the office. Don't you dare eat a guinea. In front of Mbulelo. McDonald's? KFC?
No.
Oh, no, you don't. Go sit in a corner where he won't see you.
I'm surprised he hasn't hidden the sugar away for people who make coffee and tea and put sugar in it, because who the other one is who hates the sugar is Jane. She actually counts how many sugars people put into their tea and coffee, and then she judges harshly.
For real?
Yeah. Now you know, just so that you don't make that mistake, because she'll stand there over your shoulder while you're making a cup of tea, Jane. I mean, who was it? I can't remember. One of our show hosts would come in and make a cup of tea, and then they put like two or three sugars in there, which is gross. But Jane stands over them and goes, how many sugars? Oh. And then she severely judges them. I mean, from her point of view, because Jane's in charge of all that stuff, she's actually keeping a tally in her head of how much sugar we have. So she's doing it as an accountant, you know. And she's judging because she doesn't like seeing people waste money. But she's also looking at you going, oh, do you really need three sugars? And judging harshly.
And but I say to everyone who has sugar and amakwinya and whatever is, I'm not sad when your heart attack happens. I'm not coming to your funeral, and I'm not pretending to be sad. Like, I'm not doing that.
At least come for the food, Mbulelo. Come on.
No, we, you of all people shouldn't be talking like that after your experiences last week.
Too soon. Yeah.
All right. So it is time for This Is Us, which is really our opportunity once a week. And we've missed out on two of these weeks because, Yatish, I heard you weren't so well. Are you feeling better?
I am. How's it going, everybody?
Good, man. Nice to see you. So Yatish Nasi is here, and we've got Lebang Hosana, and This Is Us is what we do on a Tuesday. It's our opportunity to kind of get on with being South African and make things look better and brighter tomorrow than it has been for the past while. Also try to figure out what our challenges are and come face to face with the things that we have to accept about ourselves. Look in the mirror. What makes us South African? Today, and I'm really going to introduce him as briefly as possible because I have so much time for this man. He's one of the most authentic people I know. He lives his principles. He has been involved in countless transformations of countless young men's lives by getting involved in something which is neither sexy nor is it top of the agenda for so many people in this country. You know, we talk quite a lot about young people. We talk quite a lot about women. We talk quite a lot about things like gender-based violence, which obviously need addressing. But the deep issue at the heart of all of this is men. And what is it about South African men that we need to face up to? What is it about role models in male society? What it means to be a real man, what it means to be the kind of man who protects, who serves, who makes the country great. And these are things which preoccupy Charlie Peterson. So it's always good, Charlie, to see you. And I'm going to hand you over to Lebang and to Yatish this morning because I'm sure. Nice to see you, man. They've got so many questions for you.
Same here, man.
Yeah, I know. It's great to see you. And first of all, how are you before we even get into all the issues?
You know, I escaped death. I had COVID. I had a heart attack. I was listening to you guys. Not a heart attack, a stroke because of all the stress. That's so I survived. Hectic. I was in Cape Town, in George, where I was hit by this mild stroke. And
wow.
No, I was gone, guys. Yes, yo. I see life now through other lenses now and appreciate every, yes, I was gone, actually, I was gone. But I'm here and still serving the same cause of our young boys and men. Hmm. And I had a nice men's conference on Saturday where men really wants to come up, you know, and said we want to make a difference.
Charlie, I'm so pleased you're all right. That's a scary story. I mean, a stroke is no small matter. But why don't you start off by just telling mostly, you know, the people who are listening, but also to Yatish and Lebang, who don't know you as well as I do, how you got involved in this, what you can tell us about South Africa and men in South Africa. And I know for some people it might be beating the same old drum, but I think this needs way more attention and it doesn't get nearly enough in the media.
Hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Gerrit. Charlie, born through a single mother. And I decided in 2016 to start a foundation, the Growing Up Without a Father Foundation, because I believe that most that are committed by men and boys are there because they lack guidance, they lack mentorship. And then I had some good mentors that helped me, you know, to cope when I grew up without a father. It was tough. It was not easy. But I believe one at a time, if I come up and said I want to mentor and coach a young boy in South Africa to spend a lot of money on kids, you know, that's what I see. Kids just need a hug. They just need to be told that, you know, it's going to be fine. And also, we also need to be careful because some of us are not there for genuine things, Garrett. You know, as men, we also, you know, there's pedophiles and everything, but not all men are like that. So we took them to a nice, make sure that if I trust this guy for 5 minutes with somebody else's child, then this child is in good hands. So there are good men out there. They are really, really good men. I can see them, but they are standing, you know, far behind them. You know, every man has been seen as a monster. You know, when you look at a man now, you'll think, hey, what's going to happen? Because if you look at the stats and the crime stats, now that came out really, and I was asking another colleague of mine, is it worth it? Because every time, especially on 16 days of activism, all these important days. There are a lot of things that are being committed by men. And I was asking myself, is he still worried? I was asking Tate Jerry Mufukeng, who's my mentor, is he still worried for us to push this agenda of men? He said, but Charlie.
Charlie,
if we don't push it,
your internet, can I just ask you quickly? I'm just going to take you off quickly and just come back, go off and then come back on, because I think your internet's just lagging a little bit. So it's making it difficult to follow the conversation. He mentioned Dr. Jerry Mofokeng, who I actually spoke to the other day, who also feels very strongly about this. But Yatish and Nebang, based on what Charlie's just told us, and we'll get him back on right now. Do you think that this is something which South Africans have to face up to? Is it something which resonates with you guys, and is it something that you feel doesn't get the attention it deserves?
Yeah, no, definitely, 100%. In the past couple of weeks with the people I've been interviewing on Life with Lebang, I think last week specifically, I spoke to a young male who, same thing, you know, he grew up in a single household, and he noticed that most of the issues that he faced in his personal life literally came from the fact that there was no guidance, there was no leadership in the household. And what we mustn't forget is that these things start in the household. And 70% of Black households are fatherless. 70% is a scary number, guys. It's not just, you know, it's not even half. It's 70%. And when you think about the long-term effects that this has on a young boy growing up, a young girl growing up, those same traumas that they experience and that same, inferiority, that same insecurity, they take this in their childhood. They become teenagers with the same thing. They become young adults with the same thing. And it just has like a ripple effect on every single thing that they do. And definitely not enough attention is put on, you know, on this matter. So I'm quite excited to just hear exactly the kind of work that Charlie does and some of the real, the tangible things that he's actually seen in his experience and how this has improved the lives of these young men and women. So, that's my two cents.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part that really struck me when Nebang was sort of sharing information on some of the work that Charlie and the foundation were doing was that stat around 70%, right? Because, you know, what you've got to consider there as well is then, you know, it means 70% of those households are single parent households, being the mother. And then you got to think about the sort of stress economically as well for a single income to be able to maintain that household, which I'm sure puts added pressure on, you know, how much the mum is away from home to try to sort of earn a living. So it's not just that these 70% of the households have only half the parent. I would argue they've almost got none, right? Because I'm sure the work for the other parent just to keep things going is so much. So, you know, that's a really, really alarming statistic. And you know, so much of what we talk about in terms of this is us and nation building and all that good stuff, you've got to, you know, for you to show compassion, someone's got to show it to you when you were younger. And so, for you to, you know, you can only demonstrate the things you've been shown. So I think that the absence of that for so many young South Africans is incredibly alarming.
Yeah, Charlie, we got you back, and I think the internet's probably a bit better now. So let's just talk about what it means to be a man and what you try to tell these young men, and how you try to inculcate in them stuff that, you know, in your sessions and in your workshops, you have them for maybe, you know, a few hours, but you're trying to squeeze years and years of what they probably need into a short space of time.
Yeah.
What do you want them to come away with? What's the best stuff that you can tell these young men?
Garrett, the self-confidence and self, most important of all of these things, you know, self-love, because most of them, they started to hate, you know, because of the conditions that they are and the things that they experience around them, because everything that's happening around them, it's always against them. So the first thing that we spend time, it's about self-love. Who am I? Identity, you know, you're not your father. Your father is not you. What are your goals? What are your visions? What are your dreams? Because it's important to have these boys to become, to dream again. Because I was a dreamer, you know, when I grew up, you know, I come out of poverty. I come out of the best important thing that helped me was to dream and have a goal and said, one day I want to be on Garrett's show and everything. I'm just making an example, but you have to have something to reach out to, and also to make them aware that, you know, Anger is a destroyer. Hate is a destroyer because it's destroying you, because you become more angry. And we do a lot of work in prison. 90% of the guys in prison are full of anger and hate. So as government, we think that we are rehabilitating these people. No, we're not, because they just want to come out and do what is inside of them. Administration, love yourself, you know, look at life otherwise than people will look at you. I was with Bennett Parker yesterday of KZT, who's also a good role model, where Bennett said, you know, I stayed in a shack with my mother, but I had a goal and said, one day I'm going to use soccer to be my vehicle to come out of poverty. So we are saying to the boys, get something. Get a vehicle that will get you out of poverty, because you staying in a garage or a mukuku does not make you a mukuku.
Yeah.
So this is where we tap into them. Self-love is tough, because after a set, is it still the internet?
Yeah, no, we can hear you.
Yeah, there's a bit of a delay there. It's we're trying, Charlie, but I know
because that also it's not their conditions. We also taught them that don't think about where you are. Think about
where you're going.
No, it's up and down on this internet.
Where you
I'm
want
afraid.
To be? Because I let them dream. I let them close me. Is it?
Yeah.
I said close your eyes and dream. It's yes, Gary.
So let's just talk about these men in prisons, because we know that the prison population is by a huge degree male. I mean, in South Africa, we've got like way more men in prison than we do women, and that's all over the world. That's the case. But you said these guys are angry. Like dealing with that, we don't have a lot of social workers in this country. We don't have people who can sit down. These guys don't get therapy. They don't get psychologists and psychiatrists helping them out. No one helps them. They go into prison and they come out worse, because in prison, you have to survive every day and every night, and it's a dog-eat-dog world. And you probably come out more dangerous than when you go in.
Yes. Yes. And I think you had Gayton McKenzie on the show. I love that conversation, you know, where Gayton was telling you what's happening. That's the real life. Because inside there, we're trying to get in there, but they don't allow you. So that we can also show them that, you know, forgiveness is a very important thing, because you're actually releasing yourself from prison in prison, because you are prison in, you are a prisoner in your mind. So we talk to them, but also they need a lot of follow up. And, you know, our foundation is not government funded. We're trying to do it with donations and everything. We can only reach a certain, number of people, but we said if we can change one person's life, then we have changed a lot. So they are frustrated, Gera. They are sitting there. I think they are planning more to do the things, you know, that brought them there, but quicker and better. But we can allow them, get them some books, get them some, you know, teachings, get them some lectures to show them there is life in our program, and they are changed people. Really, they want to make a difference.
Yeah.
But they are angry.
Yeah. Charlie, I'm really quite interested in the reconciliation work that you guys do, because what we focus on this is obviously the solutions and the kinds of things that we can actively get involved in to really make tomorrow better. So I know that a part of your guys' program is also to reconcile a son and a father. I found that to be so mind-blowing. How exactly do you guys go about doing that? Because when I heard that, I thought, "Bomakhumbule khaya," or, you know, one of those situations where you bring a father and a son together. I thought that was so great. Can you tell us more about that?
Thank you, Lebang. Look, it's tears. Others like this girl, her father left the house when she was small to move next door. With another family. Yes. We're busy with a documentary. It's coming out soon. She's also part of that. He moved next door, and for 31 years, he ignored them. And, you know, he moved, he went to work and everything from the house. And she was always saying that, you know, Dante Charlie, when I'm hungry and I can smell the food coming from next door, and I know my father is the provider that side, and he left us. So when she was supposed to get married, she read my book, Growing Up Without a Father, because I had a book, Growing Up Without a Father, and the other book is Boy Child You Matter, where I really stressed on the boy child that he do matter. So after she read my book and came to the part of reconciliation and peacemaking, she said, hey, I want to meet this guy. I said to her, can I send a team? Can we come with you? She said, no, I want to go one-on-one with him. She went and they reconciled, and most of them, Lebang, of these fathers are so captured, ne? That after meeting their kids, they passed on, they go. Because they sit there, you know, it's frustrated. You think that you're just donating a sperm and it's gone. It's going to follow you, that sperm, you know, until the end. So most of them are very emotional. Both of them, you put together after twins death. And especially girls meeting their fathers for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think there's, Charlie, I hope this you can hear me. Like, there's a lot of trauma, obviously, involved in this process of reconciliation. And I don't know if you'd agree, but would you say that for most parts, the fathers themselves don't really know what to do? They don't know how to dad, and they don't know how to father. Mm. So the easiest thing to do is kind of run away and just hope that things will work out, you know?
Like with mine, I went and met him at the age of 21. He didn't even recognize me, you know. I was standing there in front of him. He never recognized me. And I asked him, how many of us are there outside that you have a father? He said, there's a few, because you're the only one that came and looked up for me. And I did bury him, you know. So they don't know. They don't know. And they're just rolling on and on and on. And the guilt part also is there.
Oh, this internet's very frustrating. I'm sorry, Charlie. We're
it
trying
can also
to...
happen from ladies.
We got massive buffering issues on your part. Yeah, I'm gonna kick you out again, and then you can come back because it was fine for a while, and then it just got messy again. So I mean, Tish, based on what Lebang just asked Charlie now, and this is really a tough thing for most people to face up to, because everybody has some issue with, you know, the way they're raised or their parents or something else. But in this country, we know the statistics are horrifying. We also have the additional problem that most of these men, as Lebang says, they don't know how to dad, but they don't even know how to look after themselves, let alone a family. And they have emotional problems and psychological problems. And it's tough being a man because you don't just automatically get love as a guy. You have to earn the love as a guy. And that's not always true. It shouldn't be for children, obviously, but it's hard. And men are judged by how well they do and how much they can provide.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing that's hard, and I'm sure I wanted to pick Charlie's brain in terms of how difficult that is or where he finds those challenges. But the two things that you know sort of are really fascinating to me. The one would be, you know, how does he find support for the cause, right? Because, you know, we're so good at a society either calling someone a good person or a bad person, versus going, you know, the issues are a bit more complex, they're a bit more challenging. So, you know, I'm sure it's easier to raise funds and awareness for feeding kids or sort of, you know, doing good to the innocent. But to rehabilitate people is a hard cause, I'm sure, to sort of champion. You know, to your point about prisons. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, we'd want to lock them up and forget about them rather than going, what's the hard yards here to rehabilitate? And in many ways, though, I think it's so important to face up to that because, you know, as a country, we have to believe that something that hasn't gone well can be rehabilitated, right? Because in a way, that's the sort of broader South African challenges. We have to be able to understand that. So, you know, the first thing for me is how willing we are as a society, I think, to look at the parts that aren't working and really want to address that. And for me, that's a super interesting thought. And the other thing I think for me would be, if I think about Muzi's, you know, I chatted with Muzi a few weeks back, and we spoke about anger being quite a useful emotion. And you can get angry in one of two ways. You can either get destructive when you're angry, or you can sort of channel that anger into motivate. You know, for someone like Charlie on the ground is to go, what's that difference? You know, what's the difference if all these kids are angry? You know, in his experience, how do you take the anger from being something negative to being something positive where someone saying, I want to channel the anger to reconcile with my dad, or I want to channel the anger to have a better life or have a better vision. Just wondering what that is.
So, Charlie, why don't you, because I see Charlie's just come back on now, tell us a little bit about this idea of stand-in dads. And that's part of what you do. Now, we can see your silhouette, but at least we can hear you properly. What are the stand-in dads, Charlie? Tell us about this.
I move rooms. What we do with the stand-in dads, sound better now?
You sound fine. Yeah, don't worry. It's all good.
Okay. Forget a silhouette. So what we do is... As a foundation, we have a day where we invite people from the community, you know, leaders, sports people and everything to come in and stand in as dads. But we trained them before and said, you're going to meet a boy that don't know what is it to for a person to give him a hug. What is it, you know, to be shown love? So you'll get some resistance. So we train them for a day before they meet with the boys. And we just allow the boys on that day to become boys, just to talk. And they start opening up. Others are very scared and reserved because they are being molested. Mm. But people don't know that boys are being molested big time. And especially by family members that are saying that if you talk, I'm going to do this to you, or I'm going to do that to you, or I'll give you something, don't talk. So they start opening up and tell us what's happening. Is that's where we have also psychologists after that, you know. We're not like Kumbula Kaya, that just scratching the wound and leaving it like that. Like, we dig deep into that. And, you know, even fathers, the standing there's, most of them never had fathers, and they also start crying. So it's also healing for them to meet this voice. This is what the program is all about. It's a whole day of just the boy being a boy, having somebody to tell him, you know, I have dreams, I have wet dreams. What do I do with wet dreams? Because boys, these things happen. Then no, wet dreams just shows that you're growing and everything. There's some hair growing here. They never had someone to tell them what's happening with their bodies and what's happening in their upbringing and everything. So we use these fathers, you know, to be part of the process.
Yeah. Charlie, you know, we just spoke, Nana, while you're reconnecting, and I think Yatish had such an important point that you touched on about when you obviously engage with the prisoners and how most of them are just fueled with anger and hatred. And ultimately, you know, we've discussed it on This Is Us before, how we can take that exact emotion or that energy rather, and, you know, use it to fuel positivity and use that anger to fuel good intentions and good things. So I guess, you know, Yatish can maybe ask us a bit better, but from what you've done and with the work that you guys do, you know, what are some of the practical ways and things that you've seen work, you know, for that ultimately have let these young boys and these men and use that anger and that hatred and turn it around?
Excellent question, Lebang. That's why we start with self-love, you know, of our course. We concentrate on self-love, and after that, we concentrate on the person himself. You know, there's greatness in you. We try to get all the beautiful things out of him. We ask him, you know, as a kid, what were your dreams? What were your ambitions and everything? So out of that, you pick up, oh, this guy wanted to be a writer. This guy wanted to be, you know, all of this. And we said, you know, you can still do it. You know, we can try and get you some training material or this and this. We can give you this and this. So we focus on the greatness of him. And we also ask him, how great would it be for you to make a difference in somebody else's life? And they said, no, I'm going to, after this course, I'm going to be a coach and a mentor to another inmate that, you know, that's struggling with this. So we just open their eyes a little bit, give them a little bit of tools, and they are the ones, you know, they call me out of prison, and these guys are amazing. You don't know where do they get a cell phone and everything. They will tell me, Charlie, I'm busy with this and this and this. Please come next time and do this and this. But, you know, they've got somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
This is and what we try.
Sorry, Charlie, the other question we asked is and particularly around, I guess, you know, we could probably also talk to how people can get involved. But, you know, in terms of, like you say, you're not government funded, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. How do you find, you know, the other thing we were talking about is how difficult it is to probably get people over the line and convince them that, you know, who they would consider criminals or who they would consider sort of unsavory elements of society need support, probably more so than anyone else. And what are some of those challenges in getting support for, you know, the sort of challenges you face?
It is the most important thing is that most of the executives and everything in big companies are men and they are broken. When they hear about my foundation, you know, say growing up about the Father Foundation, he himself is broken and he's scared that also he also fathered a lot of kids out of marriage. So for him to get involved with me, he will be exposed. So this is one of the biggest things that are giving us a great, great, you know, stumbling block. So what we do, we raise funds by maybe having events where we invite guest speakers. And I know my guest speaker, Garrett, is always busy, you know, but I think next year I'll get him as one of my speakers because what he don't realize, he's a great role model, you know, he is a great role model. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is to get those funds. Like, I'm busy now with this documentary. I said, you know, I can't reach everyone. I need to put this documentary together. So this documentary will be finished by March so that everyone can see that we are really sitting with a bigger, bigger problem than HIV and AIDS and all those things, because social ills start with fatherlessness. And I believe that if we can get that awareness around this fatherlessness and the impact it has on the economy, on the business and everything it is, then people can really realize that we also maybe need a department of men and boys, not only a department of women and children, but men and boys, because they are also broken. Men are also broken. We need to bring the two together and level the playing field.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, Charlie, listen, strength to you and all the work that you are doing. And we will be putting all the details of Charlie's foundation up on cliffcentral.com. Thank and if you can contribute, whether it's in time, whether it's in money, whether it's in resources, all of that would be appreciated. Robin wants to know, how do we contribute? Well, Charlie can help answer that and you can get in contact with him directly. I mean, this documentary of yours sounds like a terrific idea. And Yatish and Mbang, I'm proud that we could bring this up. I know it's not something that we've avoided on this show before, but it is new to This Is Us, and it's something which deserves more attention from corporate South Africa, from government, but also from those individuals who want to make a difference for others. And Charlie says this is part of what he does with all the guys he talks to, but it's something we can all do. You know, if your cup is more than half full, then help to fill yes. someone else's. And as men, yes. really, you're not going to – men don't – we don't talk as much as women do. And we need to. We need to come to terms with the fact that we've got lots to talk about and we've got to stand up yes. and help each other.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlie. I think the work is – it speaks for itself. It's awesome. And to be able to really commit your life to something that's that important. Yatish, funny enough, I've been in the interviews I've been doing in the past couple of weeks, I'm seeing like a bit of a shift where usually I'd speak to people that, you know, would give food to the homeless and would really help, you know, from like a day to day. Now I'm speaking to people that are more interested in like the psychological and like yes. the mental shift, and that work and how important that work really is just, it's mind blowing. And more people who are willing to serve, you know, their fellow South Africans are realizing that the real change and the real work that needs to be done starts in the head. So I'm very, yes. very glad that we're able to chat to you today, Charlie, because really that's what you do. Thank and you. The fact that you're able to dedicate your time to that and you're able to use your story and flip it on its head and yes. encourage others. And I just think it's beautiful. And I wish you guys all the best. Really, I do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the moment for us to share with the nation. Thank you, G.
Always good to see you, Charlie. Gish. Thanks, man.
Same here.
I love the way, Charlie, with your picture at the moment, we just see a silhouette of you. It's almost like those, you know where they interview those dangerous people who want to remain anonymous. So they
yes, yes.
It's like a Vice documentary.
Yeah,
it's a Vice documentary.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Thanks so much.
A symbol of a disappearing father. You know, they look like this when they are born.
Well, thank God that's not what you're doing. It's good to see you. Thank you, Charlie.
Yes.
All right, everybody. Have a good Tuesday, everyone. Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, everybody. CliffCentral.com.